And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's very good to be with you. I have a pop quiz to start off the program. All right. Here is a quote, and you're going to tell me who is responsible for saying this. The important thing is not to stop questioning. That was Albert Einstein. Did you get it right? All right, I'm going to run this past you. This comes from C.J. Poitnin, Unhealthy Polyunsaturated Oils. Let me run this past you. Tell me if you believe this is true or not. If you don't think it's true, why is it not true? If it is true, why is it true? Okay. Polyunsaturated fatty acids in vegetable oils, which basically, if you go to the store and you see the heart healthy image on the outside of the corn oil or soybean oil, yeah, that's what they're telling us. They're trying to direct us toward oils that are heart healthy. Is that true? Polyunsaturated fatty acids in vegetable oils, they damage every part of the body through the endocrine system, especially the thyroid. Interesting. I think if I was a woman that had consistent thyroid problems, if I was a man with thyroid problems, I think this would be kind of an important bit of information to consider in my heart. A slow metabolism, low energy, and a sluggish thyroid often accompany the overconsumption of vegetable oils. Cattle ranchers discovered the difference between saturated and unsaturated fats in the 1940s. When they fed their livestock inexpensive coconut oil, which is a saturated fat, that means it looks like lard, in order to fatten them for market. But the cattle didn't gain weight. Instead, coconut oil made them lean, active, and hungry. Now, folks, I'm just going to stop right there and ask or make a point. Do you think this could be valuable information to you? But the cattle didn't gain weight. Instead, coconut oil made them lean, active, and hungry. Maybe we should focus on the first two. Lean and active. What do you want to be? Do you want to be lean and active, or do you want to be overweight and sluggish? Next, the ranchers, and I'm just reading what, you know, the research showed from experimenting on cattle. Next, the ranchers tested a thyroid-suppressing drug. See, folks, even they've got this figured out. Back in the 1940s, they're trying to find a way to pack on pounds and weight. How would you like to eat cattle that were raised on thyroid-suppressing drugs? All right. Next, the ranchers tested a thyroid-suppressing drug. As expected, the livestock gained weight on less food, but because the drug was strongly carcinogenic, it was discontinued. Isn't that a little bit scary? By the late 1940s, ranchers discovered that soybeans and corn caused the same anti-thyroid effect as thyroid-suppressing drugs, allowing animals to gain more weight on less food. Since then, corn and soy have been the staples of the feedlot cattle. I can't make this stuff up, folks. A later experiment fed animals pure unsaturated vegetable oil, pure saturated coconut oil, and the various mixes of the two. The animals' obesity increased in proportion to the ratio of unsaturated fat in their diet. That means the more corn and soybean and canola oil they're given, the greater they pack on the weight and the pounds. Is that what you want? And this was independent of the total amount of fat or calories they consumed. Animals that ate even small amounts of unsaturated oil were fat, and those that ate large amounts of coconut oil were thin. Isn't that interesting? I know it's not given a lot of credit in the scientific community because they say it's just too small a group of people, but there is a coral island atoll north of Australia. It's called the Tokelau. The Tokelau's there have been estimated to maybe be 500 tokelaus. Excuse me, 5,000. And this group of people, they're only eating what God has provided for them. So the one thing they do have, besides being there in the ocean, they have coconuts. And if coconuts are in abundance, what do you think people eat? They eat coconuts. How much of the coconut? Well, probably every edible part they can. They probably have everything from the coconut water, which you probably find is delicious. I remember when Shirley brought me some coconut water from a health food store in Rockwall, I thought it was just fabulous. The coconut meat, that's probably food for them. Yes, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking about an Almond Joy or a Mounds bar with coconut, but maybe that it has something in it. That's not what I'm recommending, though. But they probably had the coconut milk and they had the coconut oil. And this is probably a large part of their diet. I know they have that taro root. I would probably say that's probably close to a sweet potato. And then whatever they can harvest from the ocean. I don't know. Does tuna swim by the Tokelau Island tolls? I have... if I'm driving home from work and my wife says, what do you think about tuna? I'd usually say, sounds good. I'm not going to complain. But they're known as the Tokelaus are known as the leanest people on the planet. But their diet is approximately 68% pure fat. I don't know if you get what I'm saying. 68% pure fat. How can they be so muscular and so lean and so physically active and free of disease? Now, if I'm not mistaken, I believe New Zealand has sovereignty over the Tokelau Islands. And so if you live on the Tokelau Islands, you are allowed to immigrate to New Zealand and have citizenship. But it's very interesting when you read about those that immigrate and they go from their high-fat coconut oil diet and seafood and taro root, when they go and they start eating high amounts of polyunsaturated vegetable oil, oh boy, they develop all the diseases that you can think of. Sometimes I ask myself, I say, Roy, is the answer to these health problems just right under our noses and we're just not looking at it squarely? Yeah, of course. All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio this morning, there's a phone line officially open. It's 903-586-5257. This program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. Tickled to be here today. Why don't we talk about principles of health and healing? And so I didn't read this article to you about cattle being fed corn and soybeans just to waste your time and energy, but I tell you what, there's going to be a few people that are pretty clever, and they're very inquisitive and smart, and they have an imagination. They're going to figure out, maybe I should not be eating corn. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. I was visiting with a physician from the Cooper Institute in Dallas, friend of a friend, and the subject of coconut oil came up.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, no, you don't want to eat that. It's going to do horrible things to your cholesterol levels.
Really?
And a little light bulb went off in my head because I have been eating coconut oil for a while and watching my cholesterol numbers go up and up and up and my LDL, which I'd never had a problem with, go up and up and up. So I thought, gotta do a little experiment. So I lay off the coconut oil for about 6 weeks. Had my cholesterol checked again, and it had gone from 313 to 220 in 6 weeks.
Right.
And the only thing I did was to lay off the coconut oil. Now, I use olive oil and grapeseed oil. I don't use any of the nasty oil. So I'll hang up now. I just want to know if you had researched this at all, if you knew anything about this.
Well, before you get off the line, let me ask you a question. What does cholesterol do for the body?
Well, it's a precursor for hormones. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
It does a lot of things.
Did the doctor at the Cooper Clinic tell you there's 5 forms of LDL cholesterol?
Yes, and I've been tested, and my LDL cholesterol was a good size, good kind. So I didn't really ever have any issues with my cholesterol. My HDL was always real high. My ratio was good. LDL was low. And so that's what really got me started thinking of, well, maybe there is something to what he's saying. Not that I'm a huge fan of Cooper. It was just, like I said, it was a friend of a friend, and it was not in a clinical. Yeah. It was, you know, an over dinner type thing. And I was like, whoa, well, I didn't talk to him anymore about it. Just didn't figure it was worth getting into. And decided to do my own personal experiment.
Well, tell me what your gut instinct is. If you consumed a lot of coconut oil and your cholesterol became elevated, what do you think that means?
Well, evidently my body is not able to synthesize the fat, perhaps. I don't know. Is it a liver issue? Is it a pancreas issue?
Do you have any health problems at all that you know of?
No, I'm on zero medication, nothing.
All right, since there's so much road noise, I'll hang up and I'll give you my comment, okay?
Okay, I'm sorry. I am driving.
No, that's all right. All right, okay. Thank you. Thanks for your call, man. Appreciate
all
you.
Right.
Bye-bye. Bye. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. All right. This may not be the easiest proposition to answer, but I sure want to have a go at it. All right, let's just talk about things that we know. For example, when someone's total cholesterol goes below 100, that's a very, very common finding when someone's in hospice, when they're at the very end of their lifespan. And I don't think we have to really overthink this, and I'm not trying to be negative or morose, but when someone's body starts winding and spiraling downward, where everything's in decline and they start losing vast amount of energy and their organs start to shut down, their cholesterol levels are not high, folks. They become very, very low. And so that is a pretty accurate predictor of how long a person's going to live on Earth, as long as their cholesterol levels remain optimal. Okay? And so if somebody does a blood test on someone that has about 2 weeks to live and they make the note that their cholesterol levels are at 85, total cholesterol, that's not a good sign, folks. And so that's just for your consideration. Number two, it's been well studied that the liver is actually completely shutting down in its ability to work. It's dying when total cholesterol starts to go below the number 140. So if you've been to a doctor and he measures your total cholesterol and it's 140, I would not call that a good sign, folks. That does not sound good to me at all. Number three, I would say the vast majority of all people that have heart attacks or strokes, their total cholesterol, it's going to be below 180. And isn't that the level they tell us is closer to optimal? All right? Now, prior to 1999... normal cholesterol was around 300 or below. I'd say somewhere between 200 and 300. But with the advent of the drug model, because they found something that could block cholesterol, they had to lower that to 240 and to 200. And I think now there's talk they want to lower total cholesterol readings that would be acceptable at below 180. So if two-thirds, that would be 66% plus of all heart attacks are among people that have total cholesterol below 180, I would say, you know, there's a monkey wrench in the works here. This doesn't go along with the dogma that cholesterol is what causes a problem. Now, in saying that, there was a very famous study that came out of Hawaii, and it showed those that had total cholesterol 275, and that's probably a little bit closer to what the female caller just mentioned to me, they live a heck of a lot longer than those that have cholesterol below 275. So you tell me, what am I supposed to do with that information? Does that kind of get the wheels in your mind turning that there might be a different story than what's being proposed currently? I might add that Lipitor and Zocor are two of the top drugs that are prescribed in the entire world or on the planet. I don't know if they prescribe these on Venus or Mars. I really don't. I'm assuming they do. So we know that when cholesterol is very high or higher, or what I should say is closer to optimal, then what you have is you have life. The difference between human beings and plants or mammals is we have cholesterol and plants do not. But then again, we can move and we can think. They cannot. I mean, yes, they have intelligence, but that's a God-given intelligence. All right, next thing. There was a very, very famous study that was performed at Berkeley University in Northern California, which I don't know if you know much about Berkeley, but we'll take this as factual. And they did a very interesting experiment. They took lab rats and they put them on the human equivalent of a cholesterol-lowering medication, because the idea is that lower cholesterol is better, right? Well, here's what they did. And this is genius. I like it very much. Poor rats. Feel bad for the rats. Real sorry about that, but rats are not human beings. They're rats. Do you think I have ever tried to rescue a rat from Gus or Penny or Louie? No. If the cats catch them, it's theirs. And as far as a rat terrier goes, you can't get a rat from a rat terrier. That's the greatest prize of all time. She prefers rats above everything else. That's her greatest treat. I know one thing they won't eat. They do not eat moles or shrews. They'll kill them, but they never eat them. I have never seen the cats eat them, so there's got to be something about them that the cats just don't like. Anyway, for 14 weeks at Berkeley University, they gave rats the human equivalent of Lipitor or Zocor. And then at the end of 14 weeks, they asked a question. They said, what would happen to these rats on these cholesterol-lowering medications? What's going to happen to them if we inject them with bacterial and toxins that would kill them? Well, the answer was all 200 rats died as soon as they injected them with toxic residue of bacteria. They said, okay, let's do it again. These were on cholesterol-lowering drugs, by the way. They did the same experiment again, but this time they injected them with purified human cholesterol. So the lady that just called, all they did was, when they took a vial of your blood to measure your cholesterol levels, they took all the cholesterol out of it, and at the same time they injected the bacterial toxins, they injected the human cholesterol. Guess what happened to all the rats? Did they die? No. They all lived. This is going to be a real hard sell for you, I can tell right now. A real hard sell. And what you're going to do is you're going to say, no, Dr. Morgan, you're wrong. I believe that cholesterol's bad, especially if it becomes elevated. It's real bad then. Folks, the only reason those rats lived is because cholesterol is doing what cholesterol does. LDL, at least some forms of it, is probably the biggest honking sponge of toxins that the liver produces. And so when they injected the cholesterol into the blood of rats that were injected with bacterial toxins when they were on cholesterol-lowering drugs, it soaked up the poison so it couldn't hurt the body. Okay? Next point. I'll switch gears here. What is one of the highest cholesterol-containing foods on Earth? What is it? Mother's breast milk. Of course, this is a colossal mistake in the design of mother's breast milk by our Heavenly God and Father, isn't it? Of course it's not. Children need massive amounts of cholesterol for proper brain development and brain growth. Folks, what would happen if we put all babies on cholesterol-lowering drugs? Well, this is probably not a real pleasant conversation, and I'm not going to flesh it out for you. But we're going to have a whole bunch of kids that aren't able to function in society. Maybe what I'm saying also is, besides cholesterol having a tremendous role, see, half of the dry weight of the brain is pure cholesterol. That's what your brains are made of, cholesterol and fat. So if somebody tells me they take coconut oil and their cholesterol goes up, why do we even have to discuss that's a bad thing? Maybe that's the best thing of all time, because maybe the body is making repairs to something that's damaged. Do you ever think about that? If I had a nickel for every time I was in public and I overheard a conversation and somebody said, you know what, my husband just went to the doctor last week. I can't believe he had a massive heart attack or a stroke. The doctor said he was healthy as a horse. His cholesterol was perfect. He can't explain. Well, maybe we're looking in the wrong place. Maybe the answer is just right under our nose. That's one of the reasons why. When you look at studies on cholesterol-lowering medications, does that increase the risk of Alzheimer's or does it decrease it? It always increases it. Does taking a statin drug, does that increase your risk of heart failure or does it decrease it? You always have more heart failure when you're on cholesterol-lowering drugs. Isn't there like a... Okay, we have two opposing views here. We prescribe cholesterol-lowering drugs to prevent problems, but do they cause more problems than what they help? You ever heard of a condition called rhabdomyolysis? Causes your muscles to break down and clog up your kidneys. Is that true? Yes. Where do you have that? With statin drugs, cholesterol-lowering drugs. Is it a proven fact that you have more cancer when you take a cholesterol-lowering drug than if you had left your cholesterol alone? Of course. Anyway, let me read this to you right here. This is only for your consideration, so just let me know what you think about it. The Lyon Diet Heart Study. In Lyon, I'm pronouncing it Lyon. It may not be that way, but I think it's from France. It's L-Y-O-N. Look it up. And what they had in the study is they had 605 people, mostly men. Which, since I'm a man, I'm kind of partial to men studies. These people were an insurance underwriter's nightmare. They smoked. They ate a terrible diet. They never exercised. And some of them had previous heart problems. That's not the person that's going to get the premium rates for life insurance or health insurance. In a nutshell, they were a mess. The researchers divided these people into two groups. One group ate the standard American prudent diet. That means cut your fat to 30% of calories. Eat no more than 7% saturated fat. That would be the coconut oil that the woman was referring to earlier. Don't eat cholesterol-containing foods. This is the basic advice most doctors in the U.S. will give you. The other group, well, they had the Mediterranean diet kind of as their basis, which is much higher in fat. They had probably a hair over 40% of their calories came from fat, such as olive oil, saturated fats found in butter with more nuts and berries and whole grains and cholesterol-containing foods. So it's almost a little bit opposite of the American diet. Cut cholesterol and cut fat. But here's the question you're probably going to ask me. You're going to say, well, Dr. Morgan, what happened to the two groups of men? Well, a year or two into the study, the researchers found that the Mediterranean diet group, they had such a dramatic drop in premature deaths that they felt it was unethical to continue the study. And they released the news about the Mediterranean diet. These are the basics. Let me see, what is it? Oh, here it is right here. The cholesterol levels in those eating the Mediterranean diet, they didn't really budge. Their cholesterol didn't lower, but they just stopped dying. So even though they may have had higher cholesterol in the beginning of the study, it didn't really go down, but the problem with the study was these people just refused to die. That would have been so much more convenient for the manufacturers of cholesterol-lowering drugs if they could do a study demonstrating that cholesterol remains high and people go ahead and die. And you realize that's all very, very immoral and unethical. So much for what measuring cholesterol brings to the table. But here's the punchline. If you ate coconut oil and your cholesterol went up, I would probably beg the question, what is it that the body is repairing? Because in my mind, cholesterol is one of the most fabulous repair molecules of all time. Well, if you don't want your body to be in good repair, then do what the Cooper doctor says, and we'll find out. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, I spoke with you a couple of weeks ago. Based on what I told you, you thought I had insulin resistance. When you lose muscle mass on your legs and lower extremities, and you recommended several things, and I'm trying to follow the protocol. So my question to you is that a book, or which kind of research, which kind of material?
Well, you're kind of throwing a lot of stuff at me. What do you mean? See, I wish I could tell you. Yeah, I average probably 30 phone calls a day at the office.
Oh, sorry.
So I cannot remember every little detail, so nor do I try to. But you said insulin resistance, and you say loss of muscle mass in the legs.
Oh, yeah, what was that?
Just get me back to the starting point. Okay. What is it that you want to accomplish?
Of course, health overall, which, I mean, I seem to be in good health, except for extra weight that I'm not able to lose, or when I do lose.
I mean, believe me, I'm not trying to be rude, but you know what a pear-shaped body looks like?
Yes.
It's where they would be. They would be really, really skinny up top, but their hips would be huge, right?
Yes.
I think I made the joke about the woman that, never mind.
Yes.
But you're apple-shaped, right?
Correct.
And see, that would be a hormonal issue. And so when I say insulin resistance, I'm referring to your body has completely lost its ability to process food or energy efficiently. This has to do with how efficiently your mitochondria convert food into energy. So, yeah, I'm with you now.
Okay, so I'm just trying to find, I got your advice. I'm trying to implement it, and I got the two herbs that we couldn't pronounce it, and I'm using them. So my question is, How do I know if I'm doing all I can, and how can I see the results?
Because you'll see the results.
You will see the
results. Yeah, technically, if you start to see great results, if you see your body transform before your eyes, I mean, you've got to remember, God has designed within each cell of your body a very, very precise blueprint of what optimal would look like. And if you change the rules of the game, and your body says, you know what, we like this a whole lot better, we're gonna make her physically stronger, and we're going to selectively start burning fat for fuel. So can I give you some free things?
Sure.
Okay. Number one, if a person has insulin resistance, and this is technically, I'm saying it's free. It may not be totally free because, you know, you may want to have a pair of jogging pants or good jogging shoes or tennis shoes where you don't injure your feet. Uh-huh. But if you exercise every single day, this is one of the greatest ways to help resensitize the insulin receptor sites on your cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the ways that you correct this. Exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of it.
Yes. Okay.
And so if you start to see your body transform before your eyes, I had a woman come to see me recently, and she was telling me how physically fit she is. And when she described the amount of physical activity that she's engaged in, I thought, oh, my goodness, she's completely right. She is physically fit. She's more physically fit than anybody I know. But she, even though that was perfect, she could not lose weight at all, even though she had been trying desperately for 4 years. And if you listen to her story, you'd say, this has got to be one of the greatest, you know, colossal efforts of all time. Now, I got this story secondhand from her friend because this lady didn't call and tell me, which is what I want people to do, but she did not. Mm-hmm. But she lost 8.5 pounds in 10 days once we switched the fuel that she was putting into her body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to increase the fat content. So just like the lady that called earlier, and she said when I took coconut oil, and I realized she just gave me one small sliver of information. There's no way I can really evaluate before and after. But when you increase the calories from good, healthy fat, and you decrease carbohydrates, meaning glucose, what you're doing is you're trying to deprive the body of carbohydrates so your cells can start burning fat for fuel. And that's really what you want right now. Because if your body can start converting fat into fuel, then you can take away this hormonal catastrophe and failure that you're undergoing right now.
And with that, like, my knees are really soft, and so when I'm exercising, now it's I can tell the deterioration, even mostly because I think the muscle tone is gone, and so I don't think there's a diagnosis.
Have you been to any doctor seeking help on this issue?
No.
Okay. Are you just kind of, is your mindset that you're going to figure it out all on your own?
No, I just don't think they, I have read enough and asked enough questions around that. I don't think they would recommend a health approach. It would be more.
You tell me, what would give you the greatest pleasure if what could happen?
If this works, like I'm eating right, I am trying to exercise and doing the supplements recommended, and I just want to see that they switch, that I want to know that I'm doing everything. Because I believe what you're saying, Jeremy, I think you're right.
There's a lot of things that I can't cover, though, because, number one, you probably have many glands and tissues in your body that are just starving right now, and they need nutritional help. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing, is to devote an entire hour just to kind of covering the basics. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you this, anything that can improve the performance of your cells and how they mm-hmm. work better is going to mm-hmm. be a gold mine to you. So I would recommend something along the lines of a ketogenic diet.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can read all the cutting-edge articles that have been published recently, and it'll demonstrate to you exactly how the mechanism works. And so you can see what type of results you get. Now, I usually do this a little bit differently out of my office mm-hmm. because just about everybody that walks in the door is kind of my personal guinea pig in a roundabout way. Because if I see results that are just phenomenal, this week I had a lady come to see me. And this is the second time I've seen her. But she came in, and I could tell there was a noticeable improvement in her weight loss. And see, the month before, she kind of pointed at me with her finger, and she said, "Dr. Morgan, do not lie to me. I want you to tell me, is there hope for me? Can I turn this around? Is it too late? Am I doomed for failure? Is this the end for me?" And I looked at her and I said, "Of course there's hope for you." I didn't think it was going to be, she hadn't passed the point of no return, but I just told her, I said, "No, you can do this." And she called me about a week later, maybe 2 weeks, and she said, "You know what? I'm better." So that was encouraging. But when she came in, I could tell that she had lost a significant amount of weight, and she kind of had an apple shape also.
Okay.
And so when I said, "Are you happy with your weight loss?" she said, "No." And I said, "Well, how much weight have you lost according to your scales?" And she said, "I've lost 9 pounds." And I said, "Really? You're not happy with 9 pound weight loss?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "How successful were you before?" You know, and then there was no success. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Really, you're not happy with a 9 pound weight loss? I mean, you got to do a lot of things right over the period of a month to lose 9 pounds. And I said, "Well, let's just go step on the scales." And when I weighed her on my scales, it wasn't 9 pounds. She had lost 14.5 pounds. And I thought, "This is phenomenal." I said, "Aren't you happy about that?" And she goes, "Not really." I'm going, "Why not?" She said, "I should have lost more." Anyway, I try hard not to laugh, but I'm thinking, "Man, you have done phenomenal. 14.5 pounds over the period of about a month. That is pretty, pretty good."
Wow, if I got half of that, I would be happy.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, but I think she had in her mind set that she wanted to lose more weight and she should have lost more weight. And I said, "Well, when's the last time you lost this much weight?" She said, 20 years ago. I'm going, "Well, you know, you're right at 70 now. I mean, wouldn't you agree with me that as we age, it becomes more challenging because our bodies don't work as efficiently as what they did?"
Yes, absolutely. And that's where I am right now, is kind of feeling a little hopeless because...
Oh, no. This is
all I know to do, and nothing's happening except the negative.
Well, I can tell you this. If you try and try and don't get results,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you need additional evaluation and understanding. So I'll leave it at that. But I can tell you this... you may not know this about me, but I'm not 17.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close. But I can tell you what my body looked like when I was 17. I had a six-pack with zero effort on my part.
Mm-hmm.
I could run very, very fast. I was very physically strong. I could climb trees. Now, I can still do those things, but it's a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
We have this game that we play in our backyard. It's called freeze tag football. It's just a modified version that we made up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
My 8-year-old daughter can run like the wind. I have to be in a dead sprint in the proper angle to even touch her before she scores a touchdown. I mean, she's too fast. Anyway.
Okay. So I guess my next thing is come and see you and see if we can.
Well, that's if you want to get through this quicker and faster, that would give me great, great pleasure. Okay. You know what? Time is of the essence, though. You know what? You know what? I want to compliment you for a second. Mm-hmm. You're in rarefied air. It's only about 3% of the population that would even consider what you're considering. Do you realize that 97% of the population, even if you gave them the solution and you could demonstrate how they'll be cured and healed of their disease, they still won't do it? Mm-hmm. I have to believe that you're a woman of tremendous insight and discipline.
I heard that before.
Well, I bet you're a very strong-willed girl, aren't you?
Yes.
Meaning once you're laughing because you thought I was going to say stubborn and hard-headed. I didn't say that. No, strong will sounds much better. No, but when you set your mind to do something, you're going to conquer it. So, man, I have a lot of confidence and faith in you. I can't wait to hear what your results are.
Okay, I will do, sir. Thank you.
All right, let me know. Bye-bye. Okay, if you want to join me on the radio, the phone line is open, 903-586-5257. We've got a definite issue. Going back to cholesterol for a second. I mean, it's okay with me if you ask, is what they're saying really completely, totally true? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a young lady that I work with that loves her mother and is concerned because she's not doing well. So I've written down several things about her health, and I want to run them by you and see if I can get some direction to help her get a little bit better.
How old's the mother?
She is 49.
Oh, my goodness. She's a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
That means the young lady you're working with is probably what, 20?
mid-20s, yeah.
Okay.
She's pretty young.
Well, she couldn't be much older than that.
Yeah, no, she's not. This lady, like I said, she's 49. She has type 2 diabetes. She is taking metformin. She is taking statins for cholesterol, and she's taking blood pressure medicine. She is walking about an average of 1 mile every day.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem she is having, and I had to have her write this down for me, so I hope I can pronounce it right, trigeminal neuralgia.
Yeah. Guess what nerves are made of? They're almost pure cholesterol.
Uh-huh. She has had 2 craniotomies on her right side. She's been dealing with this for about 6 years. On the left side, she is having constant headaches and her sinuses won't drain. She's taking painkillers to try to deal with the headaches, but they're really not helping much.
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record. The previous caller, I mentioned the term ketogenic.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely the fastest way to kill out sinus infections that I know of. It's the fastest way I know of to get the nerves in good repair. See, there's a mechanism going on that the conditions are favorable for sinus infections to be there.
Uh-huh.
The conditions are also right for the body not to heal, but she's 49. She should have tremendous healing potential.
Yeah.
And so without going into just huge details, I mean, she's just got a major cluster of bad stuff going on inside of her. She is not efficiently producing energy. I mean, that is the name of the game.
Right, yeah, she's very tired, very, very low energy.
Maybe if I kind of backed up slightly, I'm going to use you as my example.
Okay.
You could drink, and I'm not telling you this is a good plan. I'm just making up an analogy. It might even be bad, but if you drink an alcoholic beverage for your dinner tonight, your liver would say, well, all right, great. I've got to detoxify all this alcohol. What do you expect me to do? And the body says, could you please get rid of this poison for us before it kills us? The liver says, yeah, I'll be glad to get rid of it, but I have a request. And the body says, so what does the liver want? The liver says energy. Energy, that's the equation. Everything that you want to take place, whether it's called healing of trigeminal neuralgia, or increased energy production, or reversal of diabetes, you have got to repair the ability of your cells to produce energy. So my hat goes off to her. She is putting stress on her body by walking a mile a day. That's a good stress. But the problem is, something is blocking it. So And I don't know that I can legally say this, but I'm just telling you what I would think of. I've had 30 years to do this. It's going to be impossible for her to heal unless we repair her energy. So we can try all the herbs in the world, we can try all the nutrients, and they're important and they're very powerful. But she's got a major energy block. And the problem is she's got so much sugar. I don't know if you know this or not, so I'm going to say it anyway. When your body converts sugar into energy, it gives off huge amount of what are called ROSs, or ROSs, or reactive oxygen species. Some people call those free radicals. But it's just pure toxic waste. And so as long as her blood sugar remains elevated, she's going to be on this downward death spiral. And she's not going to climb out of it. So we're going to have a radically different concept. The way to do this is to radically repair the ability of her cells to produce energy. And in order to do that, we have to give them a different source of energy.
Right.
Now, when you eat fat, what your body does is, it says, really, you expect us to burn fat for fuel? And you go, yeah, that's all I'm giving you. Where's the carbohydrates? You're not getting those anymore. Or you're getting a lot less of them. And the body says, okay, I get it. You want me to burn fat for fuel. And after about 3 days, the body says, why didn't you do this before? I've been waiting this whole time to feel great. Now I have energy. And that's what happens over and over and over again. You didn't know I was a genius, did you?
Yes, I've been listening to you for over a year now.
This is what makes me a genius. ma'am, tell me one more time, your blood sugar was 235, and how did this take place? Well, you told me that within about 2 weeks it would be cut in half. I said, yes, ma'am, is that true? She says, no, you're wrong, Dr. Morgan. It's not 235 to, 120, it's down to 90. I'm going, yeah, sorry, I didn't predict that. I lied to you. So how do you feel now? She said, this is the most energy I've had in a long time. That's all we have to do. Because if we take a drug approach, we're going to use every method to try to lower blood sugar without fixing anything whatsoever.
Right.
And I would say we're caught in a major battle right now. A lady asked me today, she said, well, let me throw this out here for you. Back in 1999, the average cost for a course of chemotherapy was right at $5,000 for the entire course. So if you had a loved one that had a cancer or a tumor, and they were prescribed chemotherapy, which is, we kind of think that's what chemotherapy doctors do, is they prescribe those things, that it would cost about $5,000, some a little bit more, some a little bit less. In the year 2005, they estimated what the cost of an average round of chemotherapy cost, and it was $40,000. I think it was like a little bit under $40,400, so I'm just rounding it down to $40,000. Yeah. In the year 2010, would you care to guess what the average round of chemotherapy cost?
There's no telling.
100,000. I don't even know what the numbers are for 2016. I'm going to look them up, though, now that you've made me look them up. But I thought to myself, you know what? Who is it that really wins? Well, it's probably the investors. They reap rich, rich rewards. I think the whole thing's immoral, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I think a person that takes chemotherapy, they're going on their doctor's advice, but You know what they do in a laboratory setting with mice? They say, okay, what shrinks tumors faster? What reverses cancer faster? Fasting for 7 days or 16 weeks of chemotherapy? You know what the answer is?
Well, coming from the lab, they're going to say the chemo.
Yeah, they're going to totally forget about the studies that show 7 days of fasting is infinitely more successful at curing cancer. Because what you do is you deny or deprive cancer cells of their primary source of fuel. See, when sugar burns in the body, it burns real dirty, and that's what this poor lady is suffering with. Her body is getting to be very, very dysfunctional. She has dysregulated energy metabolism. If her doctor doesn't tell her that, then they're going to focus on therapies that take about 30 seconds to come up with. Let me write down, I'm not trying to say metformin's bad. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
But All these things she's dealing with are all the same thing. She's got excessive cellular inflammation because the fuel that she's burning is very, very dirty. If we could only change that, basically what I would recommend to her is just a meat and vegetable diet. Obviously, the quality of her food choices is going to make a difference, but all this can be turned around. I've seen many, many cases of trigeminal neuralgia heal and go away when a person wants it to. I've seen lots of cases that didn't because, you know, I discovered they didn't want to. They loved Coca-Cola and donuts more than they loved feeling great. But you know what? There are people that want to feel good because they have a purpose in living. But at 49 years of age, oh my goodness, we ought to be able to turn all this around.
Right.
So, you might consider a slow carb diet, a low carb diet, a paleo diet, ketogenic diet, but I can tell you what diet's not going to work. The American Heart Association diet, that has never worked.
Right.
The American Diabetes diet, that's not going to work. It's just ridiculous. If I'm wrong,
what?
I'm wrong. I can say I'm sorry, but we need to give her foods that God himself has made.
Yeah, yeah.
And so all this can be reversed. The issue, the last night, I don't want you thinking less of me about what I'm going to bring up, because there are two drugs that are used for men that have erectile dysfunction. It's called Cialis and Viagra.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm just kind of cutting to the chase. If you have severe circulatory problems to that part of the male anatomy, you're going to need Cialis and Viagra to overcome that. But what I would say is, why don't we reverse that? And in this article, they were just looking at the role of the mineral zinc at reversing that. And you know what? Cialis and Viagra don't reverse anything. Zinc does. But I was very impressed by if somebody has a zinc deficiency, what happens to the body when you give it the very thing it needs to function properly? And this
it
is
works
just
better.
That's exactly. And so what do you need when there's blood sugar problems? You need zinc. And I know that's an oversimplification, but still I think I'm accurate in telling you that. But I would rather her be in great repair.
See, what is a good, healthy quality source of zinc?
Well, in her case, if she can get zinc that comes from either an animal source or zinc that comes from a food source, that's probably going to be the best. But right now, she's probably so severely deficient in zinc that she's going to need a zinc supplement. So, you know, pumpkin seeds contain zinc, and seafood contains zinc, and meat contains zinc. But she's probably going to need zinc supplementation because the gaps are so broad and so wide, we've got to fill them in quickly.
Right.
It's either that if we don't, then we just let her body just kind of spiral downward out of control. You know what you can do with a laboratory rat? You can say, we're going to give you water for the next 7 days, but we're not going to give you food to eat. That is a really hard sell for a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you, Dave, are you interested in not eating anything for the next 7 days? It'd be a
not
hard
really,
sell.
No.
But you know what? Sometimes that's what I have to do is I have to recommend a person fast for 1 day a week until we can get their body in better repair.
Uh-huh.
And actually, they've done studies on elderly people. If they have them fast 1 day a week, just or the other way of doing it, 1 day a week, that'd be 4 times a month, or just 3 days in 1 month, 3 days back to back. Nothing has been shown to improve longevity quite like that. And my thought process is, you know what, I might want to pay attention to those studies because, Roy, these people are living a lot longer and they're having fewer diseases. Now,
well,
the other thing that I want to say is it's just literally impossible with trigeminal neuralgia to heal it if you're on a cholesterol-lowering drug because it's preventing repair of the nerves. Now, I realize there's 1,000 doctors listening right now. They're going to say he's wrong about that. Let me give you what the raw data says. But the other thing that I would do if it were me, do you know what cayenne pepper is?
Yes.
There's an extract, and this would be the herbal extract that comes from cayenne pepper, or active ingredient called capsaicin.
Uh-huh.
So if she had a tube of capsaicin, which they sell this at drugstores, I mean, what is it, like $8.57 at the grocery store? If she were to take where she has that severe trigeminal nerve pain and just rub a little bit of capsaicin just to test the waters, it's going to burn.
Right.
But if she did that 4 or 5 times a day, this trigeminal neuralgia will probably be just about gone in 3 weeks.
And rub that on
the area of pain.
Where it's hurting, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I realize with trigeminal, tri means three. That means there's three specific areas. The one I'm concerned about right now is the ophthalmic division of the trigeminal nerve. You don't want to get cayenne pepper salve in your eye. Now, I'm the only one qualified to do that over and over again, not you. You know how I've done that before?
Well, that's the stuff they make pepper spray out of.
Exactly. So. I've had patients come in to see me, and they said, oh, I forgot to tell you, I just rubbed cayenne pepper all over my knee, and you just touched it, and you know, dummy me, I rubbed my finger in my eye, and guess what happens? Uh-huh. It's on fire for 30 seconds. Uh-huh. Anyway, so I think I've had a delicious experience of cayenne pepper. But that's one of the things you're looking at. But everything that you're asking is doable. The blood pressure correction goes away. She loses all the weight. She regains her insulin sensitivity again. She's off metformin eventually. But you know what? There's a lot of anti-age experts that are giving metformin to everybody because they know that the lower the insulin, the longer a person lives and the fewer problems.
Yeah.
I would say that's the number one predictor of death and early demise in people are insulin levels. Just like the lady that called me earlier about the high cholesterol. You know, right. Every doctor that does all this, you know, laboratory work for the condition of the heart, they know now that they can order a test called oxidized cholesterol, but they don't do it. I haven't seen a doctor yet do it, even though you can ask the lab, tell us how much oxidized cholesterol is in this person's body. I haven't seen a doctor order that yet. Some do, but just the ones far away. But oxidized cholesterol is the only form of cholesterol that's ever been demonstrated in a laboratory setting to cause any problems. So to me, that would be the issue that I would want to address. Anyway.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the information.
Well, I hope I helped a little bit.
Yes.
Thank you.
I hope she'll listen.
Well, let's hope so too, because she needs to live, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Well, let me know how it turns out, pretty please.
I will. I sure will. Thank you.
Thank you for your phone call. You're a good man.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a few minutes left in the program. Plenty of time for another phone call, 903-586-5257. Do you know what the word dogma means? And this is maybe my loose definition. It means a commonly held belief that they hold to be true, even though it's not true. And they don't look for other options. Sorry, it took me a while to get the button pushed. How are you? This is Dr. Morgan.
Hi, Dr. Morgan. Let me get out away from the radio here.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to turn the radio off because I can hear the reverberation in my earphones big time.
Can you still hear it?
Nope, not now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm outside. Anyway, I wanted to make a comment on the statistics and that sort of thing that they run on these cholesterol tests and stuff.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I had recently had this argument with my doctor, and he tells me, he said, okay, they run this test on the omega-3 fatty acids, and I guess about 5,000 people or something like that. And the population that took the omega-3, the actual level of whatever they were looking at, cholesterol, went down in them, but the people still died. And so he doesn't agree with the omega-3. My point is, they were looking at the wrong thing. The test might have measured something, but it was not measuring what was killing them.
Oh, I know. Why would you not want to vilify omega-3 fatty acids like, see, it doesn't work?
Yeah, right. So that test is reliable and it's measuring something. It's still killing them even though they're taking the omega-3, but it's not the cholesterol because
that's
the cholesterol went down.
Yeah, but you're looking in the wrong area.
That's right. That's right. And the fact is, even though the cholesterol goes down, it's not the high level cholesterol is not what was killing them to start with.
Right.
I just wanted to make that point.
No, I'm really glad you called.
Statistics, because it's how they're read.
Well, you know, I have just a few moments left. I would just soon spend them with you on the phone. But, you know, in the real world, we have to be very good at the information that we hear, and we have to question it if it's true or not.
Right.
And, of course, there's a Bible verse in Acts chapter 17, And I think it's verse 11, and I'm just going to paraphrase it. And the Bereans were more noble than those in Thessalonica.
Right.
I think it goes on to say they received the word with all eagerness, but they studied the scriptures daily to see if what Paul and Silas was saying was true.
Right.
And I think we can ask the same question. So if Paul and Silas could be questioned as to the truthfulness of their message, you know what? I don't remember Paul saying, I am extremely offended you would question my integrity. He didn't do that, did he?
Right. One more question real quick.
Yeah.
This fasting that they do once a week or whatever, these seniors, I'm a senior, what does that entail? Is that no food and water?
That's it.
Or how about water? You can have water, but
And of course, I'm not going to say that herbal tea is any different than water.
Uh-huh.
If you tell me you want to drink a cup of dandelion tea or hibiscus tea, that is fine by me. I find it's very beneficial during a fast. So I think they gave them an option of fasting for 3 days per month. That would be three consecutive days.
Uh-huh.
And another study, they gave them the option of just 1 day a week. And there's a lot of ways to do that. So, for example, can I use today as my example?
Uh-huh.
You could say, I'm going to have breakfast and I'm going to have lunch, but I'm not going to have supper. And I'm not going to eat breakfast tomorrow morning. I'm just going to get ready, go to church, and after church I'll have a meal. And so technically that would be a 24-hour fast.
Right. But what I'm trying to establish is what kind of liquid. Now,
water.
I drink diluted cranberry juice. Would that be?
That would be probably perfectly fine.
Right.
You got to understand that cranberry juice is very, very high in what are called oxalates. And so for some people, when they have cranberry juice every day, they're going to have pain somewhere in their lower back or their legs or their kidneys at some point. Because oxalate crystals do build up and they do form. So I think cranberry juice is more for a season, unless you've had an issue. For example, cranberries have been shown to be extremely beneficial to repair the damage from a stroke. And you know there's two kinds of strokes. There's the kind where the blood vessels burst open and they leak blood everywhere. Then you got those are horrible.
Uh-huh.
You have another type of stroke called an ischemic stroke, where you just have a loss of blood flow to the area and a little bit of tissue dies. That would be called an infarction.
Uh-huh.
But cranberries, oh my goodness, a cranberry is more complex and sophisticated than any drug that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
They could look at a drug and they could break it down, but a cranberry, there's no way a doctor can measure all 25,000 different unique molecules in a cranberry. It's phenomenal.
As far as fruit juices are, see, I don't drink straight fruit juices or anything because of the sugar and that sort of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good call.
What, like apple juice, cranberry juice, those are good juices.
Well, they can be good juices, but for most people that are having health problems, I think that you want to limit the amount of fruit that you take in. I'm not saying apples are bad. I think they're good. My preference is that you would eat an apple over the apple juice.
Well, I do. I eat an apple a day.
You know who taught me that phrase? I think she's the one that coined it. Her name is Hootie Jam. You never heard of her. She's very famous. Anyway, go ahead.
No. I just wanted to be sure that if I try this fasting thing, I'm going to be 75 in about a week. And I want to make it to... You heard of...
Well, this is the only way you're going to do it.
Richard Overton, he's probably going to be 111 in May. He's the oldest veteran, living veteran.
No,
111. So I'm going to try to... I'm aiming at that.
Well, that's just great. See, there you've got this goal. You're going to work on it.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you great success. You're
all right.
good girl. Thank you for your phone call.
I just want to make sure people understood about statistics. They don't prove a lot unless you're measuring the right thing.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, ma'am. I really appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.
I had another quote this week, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. I think that was from the man named Neat Pelms. I don't know why I find that so funny. Anyway, it has been really good to be with you, Lord willing. I'll be here next week, and we'll talk about some great things.